Off the Ball, GAA.
We're just taking it game by game, really. Look, it's unbelievable to win this. It was one of our goals, but now going into Tyrone, that's a different competition, but we'll enjoy now a few days, to be fair.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
We should start with Spurs. Adrian, you were very excited at halftime last night.
I don't know about that, but it certainly turned out to be a bit of a sort of a prophecy. Matthijs Tel does an interview at halftime. People get very exercised about halftime interviews. I am not one of those people. I think if you have somebody there behind the microphone who has an ability to ask an interesting question, sometimes you might actually get something interesting out of it, as opposed to, what's the mood like in the old dressing room there at halftime? You're going to get your stock answer. So
you don't like the mood in the camp question?
I'd use it as a go-to for your general blandism when it comes to...
Great blando.
Yeah, but exactly. Are you a fan of the halftime interviews?
I don't mind them, I suppose is what I'm saying to you.
Okay.
Does that mark me out as a fan or not a fan?
No.
I think people generally tend to hate them, right? Would that be perceived?
Yeah. And I just Americanized. Yeah. Bollocks.
Yeah. Okay.
Sorry, that's not what I feel like.
Okay.
That's just the rhetoric.
Yeah.
That's what people say.
Anyway, Matthijs Tel just pops up out of nowhere. I'm sort of like... prepping a little bit for this morning. I'm watching the game, but like the halftime stuff can kind of come and go and I'm not that interested. Like maybe there's an odd line said, so you're kind of keeping that level of attention.
Yeah.
So I've missed a bit where they've gone, we're going now to a halftime interview at Matthijs Tel, and suddenly he pops up. It's very unusual to see, particularly in the Premier League, a player, most especially, being interviewed at halftime. But anyway, having said all of that.
Huh? Was it any good?
At the end of it, he goes, I'm confident about the second half. We will do it. Obviously, Gerlach 9 comes to your head straight away. You know, we're going to do it. Halftime, 1995.
You better explain that for people who weren't.
Awfully clear. Don't remember what the score was exactly at halftime, but I'm going to throw in the phrase nip and tuck. I'm assuming it was pretty. It was pretty tight. Marty Morrissey's doing a piece with Gerlach 9 as he's going back out on the pitch. The blood is up. He's just been in the dressing room. He's roused his rabble, and they do, in fact, go and do it. So it was prophetic. And it felt like it was kind of a Mick Byrne, although be it that was sort of pre-match.
We'll do it for you today, lads.
We'll do them for you today.
Euro 88.
Definitely had that bit about it. I'm not sure the rest of the Tottenham squad were tuned in at halftime, but there we go. Anyway, they go out in the second half and it looks like Matthijs Tel, who, to be fair, if I can segue for a second, I have sort of flip-flopped on the whole relegation thing as to who I'd rather. It's, you know, you must have an answer to the question, who would you rather get relegated? Up to last night, I was kind of shrugging the shoulders, you know, two great clubs.
Yeah.
Ish. And ultimately, it'd be kind of a bit of crack to see Tottenham get relegated because all the investment that they've had, they're not a real football club.
That's the correct answer.
As your man in succession would say, you're not serious people.
You had a bit of Stockholm Syndrome, haven't watched them last night?
I watched them last night and just thought, I've seen them live also this season and they were pathetic, but I kind of thought, well, they'll sort of get themselves together here at some point. But like just looking at them last night, certainly Tel, Kinski, we'll talk about that save in a bit, wasn't really a pile outside of that that you thought, like they get 1-0 up with an absolutely brilliant goal from Matthijs Tel. Fantastic strike.
Yeah.
A goal worthy of keeping them in the Premier League.
Oh, he goes as far as saying that.
If it comes to it, it was a very good goal, right? And it showed a bit of bottle and it showed a bit of chutzpah, whatever else way you want to call it.
Yeah.
Right? And then they end up going 1-1 and you think, well, now this is the time, most especially when like 13 minutes goes up in the clock. I know we're like used to seeing 8, 7, 8, 9 minutes, 13 minutes. And flat as a pancake, and Leeds really should have won that game. Off the back of which I just feel my sympathy for them. The camera at one point pans to Pat Jennings in the crowd and you think about the great Tottenham players through the years, right? And you think, they don't, you know, Gazza, your Gazzas, your Gary Linekers, your Robbie Keane's, whatever else. All the greats. And you think, they don't deserve that. And then you just see what's happening on the pitch. They're pathetic. They deserve to go down.
Yeah.
I hope they do.
A little bit of hubris on Tottenham's behalf over the last couple of years that was hard to really get behind. Like they built this massive stadium. Pochettino, generational coach at the time, brought them to the Champions League final, and suddenly they're one of the big boys despite winning nothing.
Mm.
So I think that's the part of Tottenham that I have struggled with in the last couple of years. They definitely got a little bit above their station at times, and they've fallen down the table as a result. Look, on paper, they are good enough to stay up. I think that's why Roy Keane said it on the Stick to Football podcast a couple of weeks ago. He said, bet your house on Tottenham staying up because the players are just too good to go down. But that doesn't necessarily mean much at this part of the season where you're fighting for your lives. Are these Tottenham players fighting for the club thinking they're going to be here next year? Because most of them probably will not, either by ways of going to the Championship and they can't afford their wages, like, or by ways of the club.
I'd offer you the evidence yesterday of Jeff Hendrick saying that everybody thinks, oh, it's grand, we'll get a move, but then you can't because of wages.
Yeah.
So I'd say the vast majority of those players will still be Championship players next season if
Like at least
75 to 85%
are they have a forward who's 100% cut out for the Championship in Richarlison.
Yeah.
It might be slightly above his level. Like,
he'll get moved to Crystal Palace next year.
Listen, Richarlison has had his issues and has spoken about them, and you have absolute sympathy for that. But again, like, when we talk about underperforming players, like Alan Smith at one point said that, like, he had a brilliant chance for a goal and he scuffed it. And it wasn't unique. There was probably about 10 of them. Not all scorable, some of them definitely in the half chance variety, but enough that one of them should have ended up in the back of the net. And that was probably their biggest issue amongst many.
You could name, I could name you a good few players in the Tottenham team that won't be there next year.
Go on.
If they go to the Championship, Pedro Porro will be gone.
Mickey
van de Ven will be gone. Who else will be gone? James Maddison, if he gets fit, will be gone.
Well, he came off the bench last night.
And Cole Amani will be gone.
He should be name checked as one of the players who actually, the commentator said he had like 22 touches in the 20 minutes, whatever he was on, like, looked lively, had a half shot for a penalty, like the type of player you want on the pitch when you're fighting for your life, as opposed to almost every other player that was out there.
Christian Romero will be gone.
Well, Romero's already gone, isn't he?
Yeah, potentially.
Head's gone.
That's good as.
Destiny Adugi, probably. Kinski.
I don't like. You're saying the players, teams will want to.
Teams will want these players. Some teams will want these, but they are better than what they're currently putting out.
There's a stink around you when you've thrown your hat at it the way the Spurs players have as a group this year. Mickey van de Ven in the middle of all that, you're like, yeah, I really want you in the trenches fighting with me, running away from problems.
It's funny though, isn't it? Like, I don't know if this was the feeling from Spurs fans at the time, but it always felt like they were just waiting to win a trophy and then they would kick on. It's almost like the trophy thing was like a curse that would, not a curse, but like a spell that was keeping them from dropping down the table. But now, once it's been lifted, now it's just like free for all. Yeah, so it's actually, maybe you should have just never won a trophy.
I mean, this is their history. One day Ramos won a trophy, won the Carling Cup as it was, and then they didn't win another game that season. Yeah. They ended up getting sacked. Basically, the same thing has happened since Ange has won the trophy.
It's the worst thing that's ever
barely
happened.
Barely won a game since. They've taken it to extremes. They spent a whole year on the beach as opposed to the last couple of months of the season as they did that time. When they won the Coca-Cola Cup. Yeah.
I will say
Spurs are the ninth richest club in the world according to the Deloitte revenue. So when you say one of the big boys, it was like the revenue that they created was one of the big boys.
What I mean. Like in modern football,
that's all that matters.
When you have money, that's all that matters. But it's not.
It is.
Just because you have money does not guarantee you a spot at the top table. The big clubs have earned a reputation on the back of winning trophies, and Tottenham didn't do that. I think that's I really, really struggle with that. And I also do hold a grudge as to how Ange Postecoglou was treated by their fan base, because I have a very, very soft spot for him. But yeah, just because you have money doesn't make you a big boy.
Well, Ange didn't ultimately help himself in the end anyway, right? But like, also, this is the second year in a row that they've either been, you know, they've been very close to relegation one way or the other. And like, that's my point about like the ninth richest club in the world are close to relegation from the Premier League 2 years running. Like, bloody hell.
Their medical team are, you know, the amount of injuries that Spurs have had can no longer be justified as, because it was always levelled at the door of, oh, this is a result of Ange Postecoglou's high intensity play. And look, the players may still be carrying some long term soft tissue damage from that. That is a potential. But
it's not like other teams don't do the same. So the sports science is very easily transferred from one organisation to another, because everybody just puts it online and goes, "This is what we did. This is how it works." And so I don't know how that would have.
Can I say, even on that, right? Like, not a factor, right? But also, 5 minutes into the 13 minutes last night, just in terms of pure organisation, Tottenham get a free kick in a floatable area, probably 5-10 yards inside the opposition half. Jed Spence from the right-hand side. All the usual stuff. Players, edge of the area, all kind of grappling. Jed Spence floats it to the, as we're looking at it, left-hand side of the box. All of his players have, in the subsequent millisecond between him kicking the ball and it arriving, run in the exact opposite direction. Like, 5 minutes into 30 minutes of added time when you're trying to stave off relegation.
Yeah.
That Deloitte list is pretty interesting, by the way, because Spurs are 9th, Chelsea are 10th, and nestling snugly in 20th position are West Ham. So one of the top 20 teams is going to be relegated from the Premier League. One of the 20 richest teams in the world are going to. And it does show you that it's easy to mismanage these teams and these opportunities.
Yeah.
And then you look at Brighton, Brentford, Bournemouth, all still going for it, and all still with an opportunity of like Champions League football and causing a lot of trouble. It's Bournemouth who have Man City left, right?
Yeah.
You also have the issue of these Premier League clubs. Yeah, they're in the top rich list, but all of them operate on a loss every single year. Like every Premier League club, they're basically just leveraging debt at this point. And at some point, they're not going to be in this top rich list because debts have to be called in at some point. And the Premier League, I know we're in like year 25 of saying this isn't sustainable, but it's not sustainable. Like we're looking at the three leagues below them are being eaten alive by the Premier League, and ultimately that will lead to the demise of English football in the long term. We see in the La Liga they've had to bring in salary caps and all sorts of measures to stop clubs from going bust, and it actually does work. Surprise, surprise.
And I know you're trying to have high level, bring an intellectualism to the show here of a, I don't even know what day it is, Tuesday morning. Could we talk about like...
That's not what we're about here, isn't it?
If Dominic Calvert-Lewin had skinnier kneecaps, we'd be talking about Tottenham having been beaten here.
It was a great penalty though, wasn't it?
It was a great penalty.
It was very Harry Kane-esque. Oh,
I actually thought Kinski got a hand to it at one point and palmed it into the side of the net. It was that powerful and moving. But anyway, if any team should have won it, it should have been Leeds. And like, if any team had nothing to play for and every reason to be checked out, it was Leeds. You know, having had their non-relegation confirmed.
I was like, throughout the whole season, want to see Spurs relegated. But now there's a silver lining.
Oh, you've gone the opposite way.
Millwall lost last night, so at the very least, we'll get West Ham Millwall next season if West Ham go down.
West Ham have Leeds on the final game of the season as well, so they could be the deciding fixture in this running.
I've referenced this before, by the way, but like in terms of like reasons, and this should have dawned on me earlier, but the one Tottenham game I was at was the Brentford game on New Year's Day that was written about
Zero
the Athletic
XG.
Saying, if there's a worse game this season, please don't show it to me. But Vicario, who was then the incumbent in goal, was booked with 20 minutes to go for time wasting at nil all. Like, that is Tottenham season. They're a disgrace.
What a way a point it turned out.
Yeah.
Any port in a storm.
Yeah.
Dennis Ryan's a Leeds fan saying, come on, any chance for a bit of chat about Leeds, lads? Loads of you wrote them off this season and on yesterday's show too, Ger. Well, my writing them off was based on the fact that they were safe. But Fark, in fairness to him, managed to get a tune out of players who had really nothing to play for. And especially when they went 1-0 down, you thought, well, that's it. This is just going to peter out. But it wasn't the case. And they were the ones pushing in the 13 minutes, or 15 as it ended up.
Daniel Fark was, I remember doing a piece about 10 months ago about Daniel Farke and the possibility, the likelihood that he wasn't going to be managing him at the Premier League despite having gotten them promoted, that the owners were unsure of him and the Premier League might be a level beyond him. But I think they can consider all this to be success.
Yeah.
Who knows? Will they do what Brighton did and got rid of Chris Hughton after he did exactly what Farke did and kept him up? And at the time, I remember being disgusted. You can't do that. And it's like, well, maybe Tony Blue knows a bit more about football than us.
He might as well.
There's no Tony Blue with Spurs.
He might be better off
Leeds
leaving this season anyway, because he's kept them up. Mm. They might go down next season, regardless of who's over them. It's a pretty good legacy to leave if you're Daniel Farke. I don't know who they get.
Would he get a better job? Leeds a good job now if they can stay up for a couple of seasons.
I think they've both met their match. They should settle down for a few years with each other before they both decide that they want to move on again. Sean Longstaff, by the way, comes off the bench yesterday. I was like, when did he leave Newcastle? What's happening here? Yeah. They just farmed players. When did that happen? I've missed that entirely. Anyway, he should have scored at least one goal. The Kinski save, can we talk about that?
At the end, right?
There was two. There was two. The second header, one was a worldly. They were talking about it afterwards. Has been amongst the contenders. I don't have the shortlist to hand, but the for the saves of the season, it was the reflex nature of it. Like, not quite point blank range, but not a million miles off it.
Yeah,
traveling a million miles an hour, and it was only, I didn't catch it in real time as to how good it was, and then you see the replay, first replay from behind the goal, and his hand. It's not even that his hand gets up; it's that he's got the strength to knock it onto the crossbar. Incredible.
Turns out he's a pretty decent goalkeeper.
Yeah. Atletico Madrid, how are you?
I'm glad they gave him a chance, though. Glad, because it could have went one way where they just sent him out on loan, because they were looking at loan deals reportedly straight after that game. And, you know,
we found like a reason.
If he goes to the Championship, then you might never see him again.
We found a reason, Derek, that we want Tottenham to stay in the Premier League.
It's really like Kinski.
Similar enough to the Loris Karius stuff over the last number of years. He's spoken pretty openly about his struggles after the Champions League final, albeit, you know, Kinski's mistake wasn't a defining factor in losing the club a major trophy. But it's one of those ones. You've got to play through it. And he's played through it at this point, really, hasn't he?
It's a pretty impressive comeback story.
Yeah, it is.
Considered. I don't think anybody thought that he was going to. I mean, obviously, Needs Must, he ended up playing and played relatively well.
And where's Igor Tudor now? Somebody probably has an answer to that.
Ever hear name Igor Tudor again in a
didn't mind
context.
Him. I thought his level of honesty
you're
was...
You're a big fan, yeah.
Hang on now.
You're a big, big fan of him.
I didn't mind...
His biggest fan, I might say.
At some point or another, he crossed that sort of divide into a, I'm just going to start. You remember he took the reporter to hand about, like, keep asking me about my job.
That was quality.
Not for me. That was very good. I think that's what won me over there.
Yeah. He just went, it was just every single post-match interview, he was like, I don't really want to talk to you.
Yeah.
I don't feel like saying anything. I don't owe you anything.
Mm. See, that's how exchanges should be. Eager tutor at halftime, I'd take.
Yeah.
Do you know?
You'd watch that.
I keep having to remind myself of, do you know the fixture list? Do you remember the fixture list came out with 10 games to go? And they'd say, here's who Tottenham have for the rest. Here's who Forest have.
Yeah.
And you'd be like, okay, I have that information in my head now. Yeah. But then you forget it again 5 minutes later. So you need to be reminded. And I'm really enjoying the freshly reminding myself of, oh, that's who they have for the last
Spurs
couple of games.
Spurs have Chelsea and Leeds to go.
They have... Spurs have Chelsea and Everton.
No, Chelsea and Leeds. Oh, sorry, Spurs have Chelsea and Everton, West Ham have Leeds
and
Newcastle.
Last day,
exactly, yeah.
Unfortunately for the Chelsea fans, because I think their season they weren't really hoping for Champions League football or Europa League football. They were just hoping they got the opportunity to relegate Spurs, and it's not going to happen for them this time around, but they might put a dent in Spurs'.
Who would you rather be?
A Chelsea fan or a Spurs fan?
No, a Spurs fan or a West Ham fan.
Right now?
Yeah, so Tottenham,
Spurs, 2 points. It's in Spurs' hands, right?
It is.
And Madison coming back is good.
Mm.
Although Tell will obviously be suspended.
Yeah.
So you win some, you lose some.
We talked a while ago about feeling alive as a football fan.
Yeah.
And the value in your team being shit some seasons and good other seasons.
Which Man United fans haven't felt for a long time, by the way, but go on.
Or Tottenham fans, I'd argue. Well,
Tottenham fans.
What?
It's a great
felt alive, absolutely, but I was leaning more into the shitness.
Yeah,
the
one you were I think glasses. there's a difference between what Adrian was saying in supporting Westmeath and the hell of supporting a team that are supposed to be good being terrible.
Yeah.
It's
the last couple of seasons, though. Like, they were like top six not that long ago. So.
Yeah. Well, it's two full, Premier League wise, 2 full years of torture.
Yeah.
Yeah. You feel alive after that. Some people like that.
It'll get better as well.
Will it?
Yeah.
It has to get better.
A season in the Championship will be no harm, because they will then have to put in structures in place. Like, it's obviously been badly run for a long period of time from the football perspective. It's been really well run as a business. So they have a lot of money. They will come straight back up. West Ham going down. I don't know. Look, if West Ham go down, they'll keep Nuno in the job, and maybe they keep Jared Bowen for a season somehow.
Don't know about that.
Well, already everybody's being linked with him. Will I run through their papers today and just show you?
Yeah, let's do it.
Heaven then hell for Tell is the headline on the back of the Mirror for that one. Tell me why. ain't nothing but a heartache for Spurs after Mateus head kick madness.
Should be singing that one, Ger, in fairness.
I like that.
Backstreet Boys, I had to actually Google who sang it.
Really?
A sting in the tail for Spurs.
What did you say? You had to what?
Google who it was.
Who the band was. Ah, that's fair enough.
Really?
Jeez. Big Backstreet Boys fan?
It's just
a fan.
General knowledge.
Oh, whoa. Sorry, will I tell everybody what happened earlier?
I do. Cultural references this morning, on and off air.
So, okay. We're going to open the kimono here. Jack Ian Arbour was being interviewed by Armand Dara. Yeah. Dara and Jack have struck up an interesting dynamic, it's fair to say. Dara keeps asking, why is your defence so shit, essentially, in new and interesting ways, right? And at the end of it, the microphone goes down and Jack asks him about off the ball's relationship with South Africa. And we're like, well, what did you say? And then there's silence. Silence. He doesn't tell us what he said. And I went, oh, the cock crowed three times in the background. And Dara goes, I don't know what that means.
Would you rather me pretend to know what that means?
I think you would.
I'd rather you agree to the right thing and not learn.
I'd
much rather you learn, of course, yeah.
Yeah.
It was one of those things in a meeting where, you know, people who don't get the reference kind of smile politely and
giggle and move on, yeah.
I'll be honest, I didn't get it. I didn't get it at the time.
Thank you, Andy.
The two young fellas, somewhere, and then the two other lads.
There was one time Jer tried to take the piss out of me on air.
Oh, here we go.
And I didn't get the reference, so it just completely killed it. So it's the best way to avoid getting that is just you just don't understand what it means.
I'm just interested in that it's like just general knowledge, that's all. It's just
it's just a very famous band and it's their most famous song.
Jesus Christ is pretty famous.
it's a rogue reference about Jesus Christ.
It's not really.
You think there's a lot of people
who mentioned Jesus once
in the Gospels in the Gospels when he gets betrayed and a cock crowed three times in the background is kind of a fairly important part of it. It's like harbinger of doom. It's good literature, that's all.
I don't doubt it whatsoever.
All right,
I'll read up on my Bible tonight.
I wouldn't if unless you want. It's just beaten into us. Tell us about Jacques. Leinster have some players coming back from injury, but unfortunately not quite the cavalry that they need. Paddy McCarthy's going to play.
He's
not registered for the
Champions
Cup.
It's a funny one, That's the report this morning, that he can play this weekend, or if he's available for selection, he can play this weekend, but he apparently is not registered for the Champions Cup final, which is, like, I don't know how likely he would be to play, considering he's been out for so long, but obviously he's at least their second best loose head prop, potentially their best this season when he's fit. So it would have been nice to have him, I'm sure. But there's a couple of players coming back as well. Jordan Larmour's coming back into full training, as is Tommy O'Brien. So I was speaking to Jack and Jimmy O'Brien yesterday. Do we want to play a short clip? So I was speaking to Jack about, I suppose, we spoke a couple months ago about the defence and it maybe not firing on all cylinders and maybe not the players not fully understanding the system and getting used to it. But over the last couple of games, I think it's fair to say it's been pretty good. 7 points at the weekend conceded against a pretty decent Lions team. So I put that to him about the improvement to defence over the last couple of games.
We spoke a couple of months ago maybe about how the defence was letting in a few too many points than you would like and that things weren't clicking just right. Last couple of games, the defence has looked really good. There at the weekend, only 7 points conceded. Do you feel like that defence is clicking for you now, or how are you seeing that come together? Why do you think it's performing better now?
Yeah, the clicking thing I don't get because, and maybe that's just me coming from a different background, is because I think last year, if you look at us in the round of 16 of Europe and in the quarterfinal, we didn't concede a point in both those games. And does that mean we clicked? And then we lost and conceded 30-odd points against Northampton. Does that then mean we didn't click? So I'm not sure if clicking means performance or not conceding. So I just feel where rugby is currently, rugby is at a very interesting place and very good, I think, for spectators. If you look at the Six Nations, I don't think it's the game is as conservative as what it was maybe a year or two ago. I think if you look at scores these days, there's always, if you want to win a game, you need to score 25, 30, 35 points, because the other team is also going to score 25, 30 points. So I think the game has definitely transformed a lot more in an attacking way. So I just think that's where the game is, and teams just have to adapt to that.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's.
We kind of noticed this around the. Everybody was giving out about rugby nonstop. Yeah. Game is shit. It's terrible to watch. What's gone wrong? Then the Six Nations happened, and I was like, "Wow, this is the greatest sport we've seen. It's the greatest version of the sport we've seen." It's kind of somewhere in between in the Champions Cup since. Well, that's not really true. I suppose the Champions Cup has been test level.
Yeah.
And it's been class.
It's just one of those things. Teams have just taken a while to, you know, form their system around the new rules and really understand. Like, I was speaking to him a bit off camera, not to get, you know, betray any confidence, but he was just saying, like, it just takes like reps and games for teams to actually try different things out and see what other teams are doing and what they're, how they're reacting to new rules. Like, he mentioned the escort rule, but not being able to gather around the ball when it's in the air, and he, you know, wasn't sure whether teams would kick the ball more or less. Like, they didn't know that.
You have to wait and see, yeah.
Yeah, just have to wait and see. So they have to try different things because you still have to play those games. You can't just, you know, you still have to go out and have a system for a game. And that system might be absolutely unsuitable for the current format, but you just have to try it.
You won't find out until you give it a go.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
If you're Bordeaux looking at Leinster and that system, like, it definitely struck me against Toulon, just how quick it comes out, that kicking over the top, and maybe not Bordeaux, it's not necessarily their game, but like, that felt like if I was if I'd somehow wandered my way into an elite coaching team there and I was trying to unpick this Leinster team, or at least try and curtail them a little bit, that might have been a pretty good weapon that they didn't really go to.
Like, we were talking about that with James, weren't we, last week, about the kicking game, how important that's going to be, and if there's any team that can pick you apart with their feet, it's Bordeaux, because there's, you know, five or six different backs that can kick a ball and land it on a penny, like, so. Yeah, that's going to be very interesting, and it is just also just interesting to hear in a different perspective as well, because obviously he's not an Irish coach. He didn't grow up here. He obviously had experience with Munster years ago, but, you know, he's come from South Africa and has been in that camp for a long time. And the way he sees the game in terms of very much game by game, and not no such thing as momentum to him, essentially. I just find that quite interesting.
A conversation that obviously struck up in the last, prior to the last couple of months where things started to click, Dara, about whether this had been a good thing or not.
Yeah, it was ridiculous, I thought.
Yeah.
Said it at the time. But
that's disappeared now.
Well, until they lose. As soon as they lose, everything is a stick to beat them with again. Like, I had some sympathy with Leo Cullen. I don't know if we've spoken about this on air. It's like, he is held to a standard that is somewhat ridiculous compared to what actually success looks like for everybody is Real Madrid in the first five seasons of the European Cup, where they won it every year, and like, that's never going to happen. So being in semi-finals and finals year in, year out is actually what you're supposed to do, and then when you get there, you hope that you get the break, or that your team puts in their greatest performance, or that Michael Olatoa doesn't go off his feet when you're pummeling the line against La Rochelle with a minute left to go, or that the kick goes over instead of squirting wide of the post in the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. I think just being in those games is your base level, and then anything above that is the gravy. Mike Sherry was on saying every single player who plays under him will be a better defender as a result of playing under him. And maybe the system is being worked on, and maybe all of the other big brains in world rugby have been looking at South Africa for the last couple of years as the best team in the world and going, well, we're going to unpick that, because if we can do that, then we can beat the best team in the world. So maybe there's more evidence on what they're doing, and maybe that whole thing between the players moving from one to the other, I'm not really sure I'd buy it, because they were all able to do it as the, you know, they were all eventually able to get good. I think there was a mad hangover from the Lions. I think everybody was a bit underwhelmed by going back to the grindstone, and now they're back in a World Cup cycle essentially, and every match from this point forward is like trying to nail down a place in the World Cup team for Ireland.
Well, like, the thing is now no more laws will change as well, so like, this is, you know, these defensive systems won't change as much as they have in the last kind of 18 months or so. And yeah, like, I think being there, like speaking to Jimmy O'Brien yesterday as well, and you know, it's the most cliche answer ever, but it's true. Like, those finals are just fine margins. There's no real formula as to why they haven't won those games against La Rochelle or Toulouse. I don't think there's a mentality thing, because, you know, you need a strong mentality to get to a final in the first place. And like you said, there's the Frawley drop goal that just slips past the post, and there's several defining moments in those La Rochelle finals as well. So I think people are a bit too harsh maybe on the coaching ticket, but I think at the same time you still have to ask these questions, particularly earlier in the season when Leinster were leaking far more points than they probably should have been. We should be curious about it, but if I was a Leinster fan, I would have full faith in that coaching ticket, because it's a world class coaching team. It really is. Even Tyler Blaindall in there.
Rob McBride,
like there's plenty of talent in there. I wouldn't be worried whatsoever about the coaching team they have there. Should we hear from Jimmy O'Brien?
Yeah, go for it.
We have a clip from Jimmy O'Brien as well if you want to play that now.
You're standing beside a Champions Cup right there. Are you excited at this point, or does it not tend to occupy your mind too much?
It comes in and out. I think I'd be lying if they said they weren't. It didn't come into my mind. But you just try to put it in the back of your mind, because the best way you can try and get selected for that is performing well this weekend. So, it comes in and out of your head and stuff if you think about it. But I think the lads who get selected this weekend will be fully focused on Ospreys.
You were in the senior squad in 2018 and obviously played a couple of those finals that you lost. Mm-hmm. I imagine there's a big motivation there to finally get over the line.
Yeah, 100%. I was in those two La Rochelle finals that we lost, and they were pretty tough, and then I was around the squad for the 2024 as well, only against Toulouse. It's one that we've kind of been chasing now for years, and hopefully we can get the job done next week. But as I said, kind of the first job is this weekend against Hotspurs.
It's good to see Jimmy back, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, he's class.
Another good Kildare man.
Another
massive loss to the Kildare footballers.
Newbridge, yeah.
From Nice, I think.
What are you doing out there?
Newbridge, yeah.
Between just hurlers just and rugby players and
world-class soccer players and rugby players.
He's one of the best kickers in the Leinster squad, as in just out of hand.
But man, for now, right, 2-pointer outside the arc, wouldn't he?
I'd say he would be, you know. But I was speaking to him as well a bit about playing the different positions and stuff, and you know, he's very much a player that has no problem with the versatility of his own game. He's playing a lot of left wing these days, which as a Leinster fan, I don't know how you feel about, but he's been doing a pretty decent job, in fairness to him. But
I didn't realise he was an out half in school as well. So,
yeah.
He's an X-factor player, isn't he?
Can play 13, can play fullback, yeah.
Next season, Frawley will be gone. Maybe they've got a lot of those younger players who could all be the second choice out half. I guess Prendergast is the second choice out half, but if you're going for a 6-2 split, somebody like Jimmy O'Brien suddenly comes into his own, incredibly experienced, he'd be 30 next season, and there will be times when you want a 6-2 split and he can play right across the back line.
Yeah. And like you say, Frawley leaving opens up those opportunities for a player like Jimmy. Like, not that he's not been getting games, he's obviously played a load of those finals, but...
But you're saying a tenger, is it? That he...
Well, 6-2 on the bench. He'll guarantee his place in the squad. In a way that I think Frawley's guaranteed his place. We haven't spoken about that yet, but...
Yeah, like, and Osborne plays a little bit of 10 as well when needed, like in games. So I think if you have two guys like that in the squad, you'd be okay.
Yeah,
like it, obviously you want your starting 10 to stay on the pitch, but they'll be fine. He's a proper Rolls Royce player though, just one of those guys who can just play football. Do you know what I mean? Like, he can just play. I'm a big fan of Jimmy, big fan.
A reminder, Off the Wall Breakfast is live with Viagra Connect 50 milligram film coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 1 50 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie, subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation. This is one of the other main headlines in the back of the Mirror this morning. Right headache, Arsenal hit by injury setback. So it's not like they have a really important game coming up against a world class left winger anytime soon, but it looks like they're going to be without Ben White and Jurrien Timber to go up against Kvaratskhelia in the Champions League final.
I think for them it's a the Arsenal fans in the comments will let me know about this one, but I think it's about trying to get over the line in the Premier League. And
so there's a shot to nothing element.
I think that.
I know. You're framing it that way. The trouble is, you never get back there. You know, this is actually roll all of your pile into a heap. Go for it.
Honestly, I wouldn't be super worried defensively on that side of things. For Arsenal, like Mosquera will come in and he'll be absolutely fine. They can provide more cover if they need with by sticking Zubimendi into the midfield with Rice, or they can bring in Capi into the team. So defensively, they'll be fine, but I think this impacts them more going forward with Ben White out injured. Him and Saka have a really, really good relationship, and it's probably one of the reasons why their form has turned around over the last, I say their form, they've been winning games all season, but more attacking form. They've been better going forward, obviously. And Ben White and Saka's relationship is key to that. So I think this actually impacts them more going forward than it does defensively, because defensively they'll be fine. They'll just.
Do you think they're going to be fine against the best attacking collection of players?
I don't think even with their best players on the pitch they'd be fine against that PSG team. That's the problem. Similar to what
Kenny Cunningham over there is.
Well, Vincent Kompany had a very interesting thing to say about the PSG game in the first leg, where he said, "You either go all out attack or you go all out defence. There's no way in between against this PSG side. Arsenal were probably going to go all out defence anyway. So it's kind of just come at us, see what you can do." I'm not saying that Mosquera is as good a defender as Ben White is, because Ben White's a really good defender.
Is it harder?
Of course it is. Like, you want your best players on the pitch.
Yeah.
But my key point is more that I think this actually impacts them more going forward than it does going back. I don't see him putting Declan Rice at right back again after what happened against West Ham.
No, I don't think it's going to happen either. Locked in McIlroy can avoid repeat of post-Masters malaise. This is James Corrigan's piece from Philadelphia, where the PGA, is it slightly low-key? Have we not just tuned into it just yet?
Yeah, I'd agree. Slightly low-key, yeah. Haven't really thought about it much.
Mm. Going under the radar, yeah. McIlroy has a blister on his right foot going into that. That's the big news.
The other news is that he was missing right. He had a big right miss in Charlotte at Quail Hollow, which is obviously one of his favourite tracks. Made his breakthrough victory on the PGA Tour, shot 60 there, like it's a happy hunting ground for him. Wasn't good first 3 days, spent some time in the range on Saturday evening and then closed out with, was it a 67? So it feels like he is actually in reasonable form, and this is going to be good.
It's going to be fun. Like, golf has kind of moved into this era now, though, where we're going into the majors, and it's kind of the same main people we're looking at as potential winners. Like, it is Scottie Scheffler and Rory McIlroy, first and second, are going to be favourites going into every major for the next couple of years. Cameron Young has definitely catapulted himself up the rankings over the last year or two. His putting in particular is super strong. Interestingly, John Rahm is the fourth favourite for this after his re-move back to the European Tour and becoming a PGA player again. So, you know, will he crown it with another major? I don't think so. But it's a hard time for the PGA Championship to be happening for Irish fans when you've got Munster Hurling,
yeah,
Ulster Football, Premier League Championship playoffs,
Leinster
obviously Celtic
Leinster
against
football,
Hearts, the key one in the middle.
I know you're getting there with the Leinster Football Final. I know it's on your list.
Of course, yeah, of course. That's definitely top.
Are you going? After.
Absolutely. Whole family are going. Got the jersey during the week.
Corporate box?
You just No. Bought and paid for it.
You got the jersey during the week?
Yeah.
Would that make you
The last jersey I had there was from the 2004
last jersey I had was the Crokes jersey. You were dubbed now. What are you talking about?
No.
What jerseys are the kids wearing?
By club. So the young fella wore his Westmeath jersey down to Hurling last night. So I'm hoping, the eldest lad.
Right.
The youngest lad delivered me my proudest parenting moment last week. So he's an Arsenal fan and a Man City fan.
All right.
I'm trying to slowly wean him off the Man City thing because I just can't have it. Right. We were watching the Everton Man City game last weekend and he's four now. I explained to him, if Everton go on to win this thing.
Sports washing is bad.
If Everton go on to win, well, exactly. If Everton go on to win this thing, Arsenal are going to win the league. If Man City win it, Man City are going to win it. Who do you want to win the league? Put him to the pin of his collar, like.
Yeah.
He said Arsenal. So that's at least one moment. Anyway, a little later on that night, all I heard from upstairs was, "Dad, can I get my Westmeath jersey tomorrow?" I was nearly in tears on the couch. And the middle child, who's a girl, is full of logic and does have a lovely pink Westmeath jersey. But said,
"I'm a Dub.
I'm from Dublin.
Yeah.
I live in Dublin. You're from Westmeath.
Come on, you need to do that thing.
Identity is a tough thing, Adrian.
A lifetime of
Ask Declan
it is.
Rice.
It's complex.
Yeah.
So anyway,
you've got the
and my wife is from Meath, so you know.
you've got the opportunity, the two of you have the opportunity to give them a lifetime success by just being front runners and Dublin supporters.
It's too easy.
Yeah, it is.
They just have it too
easy. At the least resistance. They might continue to go to matches.
Yeah, I think the youngest lad will end up like a Mick McCarthy and have an adapted nation that, you know, adapted county.
So he might play for Westmeath then.
I would say the feeling you would have had after the Meath game, just alone. I don't feel like Dublin fans will feel like 100%. That ever again.
100%. Like,
Dublin will win more All-Irelands, obviously, and they'll feel great about it. But the fact that you've got that, these couple of games, like, in...
And don't forget about these lads. That hasn't been spoken about half enough.
Yeah.
I mean, beating Dublin after this, after beating those lads and the other lads, is nearly an anti-climax start.
Ah, yeah, sure, you knew you were going to win that game from days out. Glasner and Luis on the shortlist for the Chelsea job. So some newspapers are reporting that it's a done deal for Xabi Alonso, but the Telegraph have it this morning that Glasner and Philippe Luis are still among the head coaches that they are considering, having already considered Iraola and Silva. The three-man shortlist has become five. So, I don't know, I guess you pay your money, you take your choice in that. The other big story is Jose to Real Madrid, looks like. It might get done, and Marco Silva is being tapped up by Benfica to replace Jose if that happens. That's the morning transfer speculation here. The I newspaper are saying that it's going to be Alonso. Lawmakers to address grappling after Arsenal VAR call, but not until after the World Cup. So next year in the Premier League, they think they're going to try and something. About the grappling.
It's the referees industrial complex at full work. We change the rules, and then we change the rules to help referees, and we change those rules to help referees, and then we feed into those by investing in new technologies to help referees. Now the referees are on Match of the Day and pundits. So the real winner of the last 5 years have been referees. Well, they've really catapulted to the top of football.
The suggestion by the people. Match of the Day referee to bring GA rules into it and don't allow players into the small parallelogram.
Yeah.
And,
Sorry. Yeah.
Before the ball is kicked, in fairness, it was...
Okay.
That's the old square ball rule. Yeah. That's the one before they changed the rule.
Yeah. Benfica step in to deny Uma his Ireland debut. So we were, you know, a bit disappointed about this. Jaden Uma has been withdrawn from the Ireland squad for this weekend's game in Murcia against Granada. Benfica still haven't qualified for the UEFA Under-19 Youth League. A result went against them, beaten at the weekend. They won at the weekend, but they actually still need to win next weekend to qualify, so they're saying you can't go play for Ireland.
That's a shame.
It's nothing more than that though, right? It's nothing. He's going to make his debut.
Of course, at some point. But I think a lot of people were excited to watch him. Yeah. Should he have been picked for this game? So shame for him and a shame for the viewers, the fans. Yeah, we'll see him at some point though, for sure.
The Alonso stuff is his agent putting the willies up Liverpool.
Do you think so?
Is there a chance of that?
The Chelsea job is a great job. You get paid a lot of money. They've decided that the next manager who comes in is going to have some power and sway over transfer activity.
Sure they have.
Yeah.
If you're Xabi Alonso, which gig do you want? I don't even think this is a controversial answer. Like Liverpool, which will come up sooner rather than later. Yeah.
Liverpool.
Yeah.
But I don't know. The expectation at Liverpool is that you're going to win immediately with a team that has just won the league, right?
He'll have a bit of leeway though, right? Because he's a legend.
Christmas, maybe. But at Chelsea, you're coming in... I don't know. I don't think the Chelsea job is as bad as everybody makes out, because it's been bad up to this point. There's always somebody at some point is going to come in and go, well, look at the incredible array of players we have. Like, if you sign three or four very experienced players, sign Emi Martinez, John Stones, Bernardo Silva, and Jordan somebody Henderson. Else for like not very much money, and suddenly you have some age and guile in the squad. Now, obviously, they're just examples, right? They have access to all the world's best data, so they'll sign players who will be better than that. But you can sign experienced players and add them into that. You're a very young squad, and suddenly they're in the Champions League next season, which is immediately progress. Mm-hmm. Liverpool, to have progress, you need a Champions League semi-final and a title race. Straight away.
Yeah.
It might be oversimplifying it to a high degree, but it almost feels like Liverpool's last transfer window was for Xabi Alonso. Like the way that they built the team and brought in two of his key players at Bayer, obviously, but having Ekitike there with Isak is also two options to play up front if you want to do his 3-5-2 formation. Mm. Frimpong as a winger. On Chelsea, yeah, I would agree with you. Like, your guarantees are bring me some actual men to put into this team rather than giving me all the talents in the world that are all bought to be sold. They're like cattle at Chelsea at times. But we obviously want the Liverpool job.
If he does, you see, if he does the Chelsea job, when can he go to Liverpool? I'm not saying he can never go to Liverpool, well, but he can't really.
They're just enough firepower to move.
Yeah.
You could definitely do it down the line. Yeah, I don't think. Yeah, I don't think that.
But also, like,
he left
Liverpool already.
Yeah.
Like, he left Liverpool happily to go to Real Madrid. Yeah. He's like, absolutely, I'll get out of here. Yeah. No problem.
Also was very heavily linked to, remember before Slot got appointed, there was like a lot of, and then he signed a new deal, I think, at Leverkusen at the time.
Yeah.
I don't know.
He was a Spanish guy going to Madrid.
Yeah.
Look, it's not bad at all, but like, it's not like Trent. It's a bit different.